everyone. My name is Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be back.
Welcome back, John. Good to see you. And on the political left, Shireen Gorbani.
Hello. And hey, listeners, I hope you're doing well.
John, Shireen, do either of you do any kind of chats in Signal?
Yes, ma'am.
You do?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, this is as big of a sort of...
But I don't do classified discussions in Signal. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Sensitive information in Signal. I mean, this is pretty big news when you're taking the... Isn't he the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic?
Yes, he is. Yep.
And putting him... This is Jeffrey Goldberg. Putting him in a text thread with the vice president, the secretary of defense, the national security advisor.
Oops,
the head of the CIA. Am I getting this right so far?
Yeah, I think I
got about right.
Well, and not just in a chat, but a chat about an attack on Yemen.
Yeah.
In response to the attacks of the Houthis out there.
Yeah. So there's a lot of incompetence here, John.
Oh, well, you know, my
bad judgment, it isn't a strong enough word.
No. And I can see for certain sensitive information, you'd want to use something like Signal, especially when you've got allegations that the Chinese are in our national telephone infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
But you should not be having classified discussions over an app like that.
Yeah.
I mean, the federal government should have better tools and resources to have that kind of sensitive classified discussion.
So to be clear, the federal government does have better tools and resources. Well,
and they should be used.
Yes, yeah, to do this kind
of
thing.
Well, I mean, if they don't, it's like, okay, this sends
Shireen
a other message.
I a couple of times traveled internationally when I worked in the federal government. I would be issued a diplomatic passport. They would give me new electronics to take with me on the trip, and then I'd return them when I get back.
Yeah.
Natalie and her burner phones.
Even this a little person like me, you know, had to be pretty careful about those kinds of things. So this is, I don't know, it's so sad.
Yeah, okay, so I really want listeners to come with me. I think many of our listeners maybe fall on my side of the aisle, but I want people to understand.
Maybe. It's not just you?
No, it's not just me. I know that there are many who are opposed to my political views. I think that we can find agreement. I believe we have consistency around this table, and I hope that people understand you are less safe under this administration when we have this kind of undisciplined, complete lack of seriousness around the level of risk that this kind of information sharing poses to the people of this country.
Yeah.
This is not, like, not good is insufficient. This is worst case scenario in many ways. The lack of security, the lack of protocol is putting this country at risk.
Well, and you may disagree with me here, but I look, and those on the right made a big deal about Hillary Clinton's email server. And I look at this as on par with that issue. I had problems with that. I have problems with this. Serious problems.
Yeah, there's so much to not like. But I have to tell you, one of the parts that I liked the least was this notion of having these emojis of, you know, a fire, a fist bump, a burning flag, or whatever.
The flex, the bicep. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. This. And really quick story, but Miles Hansen, some of our listeners may know, he used to be over the World Trade Center, Utah. He used to work in the National Security Council. He tells this story of some national security event that went down that involved the military, that they were in the Situation Room, and afterwards they were all like high-fiving and ordered pizza, and they were so excited that they had prevailed. And the National Security Advisor came in and shut that down. And he said, this is sacred work that we're about.
Yeah.
This isn't, you know, work where we celebrate. This is work where we...
This isn't a football game or something like that.
Something.
This is
and
serious.
And when you hear Miles tell the story, you're just like, exactly.
That is not...
I feel like our soft power has evaporated.
Yes. And that kind of discretion is not what we see in the leadership around this administration. And frankly, I think it's stunning that Pete Hegseth had the gall, though not surprising, to come out and just say, never happened? You have to be kidding me.
Mm.
This is a disgrace.
John,
the Houthis were out of control. Something needed to be done about that.
So, yeah, there's a national interest here.
There's absolutely a national interest here. But the way they went about that just colors the appropriateness of what they needed to take care of.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. And I guess I would just say... when you pick cabinet members based on two criteria, loyalty and do you do a good job on TV, this is the kind of thing you're going to get.
This is what you're going to get.
And you know, there's a lot.
That's
left.
Why none of us are there.
There's a lot of history left to be written about this administration, but this was certainly a low point, and it'll be interesting to see what they do to recover. Can we talk trade one more time? Tariffs.
You know I love to. The tax the American businesses and American people pay on goods that are imported to this country. Go on.
Well, John and Shireen, I read probably about 90 minutes a day about the Utah economy and the U.S. economy. It's just, I mean, I'm an economist by training, so my regular diet of reading is The Economist magazine and what Moody's is putting out and what J.P. Morgan Chase is putting out. It's just, I guess, it's what I do professionally.
When you relax, you watch Moneyball.
Oh, yeah. Well, I listen to CNBC or something, you know. But the issue is most of our analysts are now on recession watch, and they're all increasing their percentages. Now, they still think it's less likely than likely, but they're upwards of 35 to 50% at this point, the subjective probability of a recession, and it's self-imposed, John.
Is this tariffs or the whole aggregation
enchilada.
Of everything?
Yeah, it's the Doge layoffs, it's the tariffs,
the
it's mostly the uncertainty.
I mean, I told folks for years, companies can deal with bad tax policy, they just don't like unpredictable tax policy. And when you look at regulations and other things, the uncertainty and the whipsawing back and forth.
So best case scenario, Shireen, is that we get this behind us by fall, meaning all the posturing and what it does to the economy, and the president sort of backs off and gets to the table to renegotiate the USMCA, you know, the new NAFTA, whatever.
Yeah.
That's the best case scenario. What are you seeing from the left?
Oh, okay. So what I'm seeing is that this is a president who I think, did not get to 50%, won on one of the narrowest majorities we have seen ever, right? I mean, and the mandate, I guess if we're going to call it that, was thin, and it was around the economy. So he is going to need to get focused on bringing down the cost of everyday good for Americans, mm-hmm. or I think we're going to continue to see the unrest, the anger that's building in the American public start to boil over. Mm-hmm. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, so let's...
Is there ever an appropriate role for tariffs? I'm not a tariff person, but where would you put tariffs
when
if you were the president?
Narrow and strategic, right? Okay. If you're protecting an industry that's important to national defense, when you're negotiating something and you need to get someone to the table and you know are pretty careful about, you know, surgically protecting an industry, you can do that.
I mean, I can understand
that. It's the broad-based distortionary tariffs that serve no purpose other than to get a retaliation.
Right, right. And I can understand the dynamic of reciprocal. Okay, you're doing this and we're going to levy this. I may disagree, but I can understand it. Yeah. But this, we're going to slap 25% here, 25% there, and they're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Usually I
lectured up on campus.
Almost always we pay for it.
I lectured up on campus on this last week. I had a group of business scholars, maybe about 70 business students, and I was explaining to them the difference between competitive advantage and comparative advantage. But comparative advantage is the theory and the doctrine that helps teach us that when you engage in free trade, you both benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
well, and I think Trump honestly believes that a lot of these tariffs aren't just good for negotiations. They're good for American economic policy.
All right. So we go to, you talk about a whole bunch of things that might crater the economy or whatever. We go to the USPS chief, Louis DeJoy. He was appointed during Trump's first term, I think in 2020. He used to have quite a leadership role with one of the big shipping companies. I don't know if it was FedEx or USPS. Or sorry, UPS.
Yeah. I can't remember.
But then with USPS.
But he's
a logistics
guy. It sounds like he's turned in the plan to cut 10,000 workers from the U.S. Postal Service, and now he's resigned from his post. Shireen, this is one of those things where you say the American public will react to this. If they start seeing the lines get longer and longer when they go to mail something—
Yeah.
When they start seeing, you know, mail that doesn't come or it's damaged or it goes to the wrong address.
Yeah. Or
this is basic, like, take care of your people.
Well, but have you been to the post office lately?
I mean, it's crowded.
I go to the local grocery store for the postal service. Mm-hmm. It's so disappointing when I actually go to the post office.
Mm-hmm.
They don't seem to know what they're doing. It takes them forever to get the job done. There's been times where I've just said, forget it. I'm out of here.
He's using
Never
a good
mind.
Word on air.
Forgive, yeah.
Okay.
Forgive that I even asked.
But I pointed out, so John, your argument is they can get better. And my argument is be careful what you mess with here, because if we're talking about layoffs, this is an agency that has labor shortages right now.
Yeah. Well, and I would just add, so my experience at the post office has been different. I would say generally it's great. But I will also just add, when we think about things like the voting law that changed this year in our state. So now saying that ballots need to be in hand by Election Day. These are the kinds of things that if we start to see slowdowns in our system, so even if people think, well, I'll mail my ballot back a week in advance, it may not be enough time if this process really starts to deteriorate. And that's to say nothing about people's need for medication, sensitive documents, passports, whatever it may be. This has real implications for people's lives and can really disrupt things that people expect to work.
Shereen, let's stay with you for a minute because just in our last topic, this segment, but this fighting oligarchy tour, this is what I'll call the far left part of the Democratic Party going to Republican neighborhoods, you know, congressional districts and bringing their fighting oligarchy tour. What are they thinking, Shereen?
This is Bernie Sanders and AOC. This is not Chuck Schumer.
No, not Chuck. But okay, so here's what I'll say. You may not like the term oligarchy. I wouldn't have chosen it either. I think fight billionaires is a lot easier to understand. But what we have is a concentration of power around those with extreme wealth in this country. They continue to benefit. They're going to benefit from Trump's tax proposal that it sounds like Republicans are happy to move through. Frankly, we see, you know, many policy choices that benefit the very wealthy in this state. This is an ongoing problem, and I think you would, and I would actually agree, that the growing wealth gap, even in our own state, is something that we should all be concerned about. So I think that there's a real serious message here when we're talking about handouts to billionaires or cutting people's Medicaid, their access to food stamps, their access to safe and secure schools, you know, the kind of infrastructure like the post office that people rely on. That's what we're talking about. But I don't know why we don't just choose a simpler word.
I have a building theory
about this. What word would you pick?
Well, she's just fighting billionaires.
Let's ban the billionaires.
John, finish this up and then we'll take it into the next segment as well.
Well, so I look at this and it kind of doesn't matter which administration's in office. I would say this oligarchy or the fat cats, the system is rigged against the everyday person. This is what Trump ran on because this is what I think a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle feel, that the system has been rigged against them. And it doesn't matter if you're a liberal or a conservative, you know, banker,
right,
that the system is stacked in your favor. And you can go from there to industry to industry to industry, where industries have captured our regulatory agencies, our tax policy, and everything else like that. And the everyday American, regardless of their political views, just feels like they're being left behind.
There is simply not, though, an administration that has had more personal wealth than this one. So I think when you really look at the kind of individual wealth that these individuals have that are running our government, this is unprecedented.
Yeah. I'm going to make sure the middle doesn't get squeezed out, but I'm going to have something to say in the second segment. Stay tuned, everybody. This is Both Sides of the Aisle.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Shereen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle.
Natalie, we got to ask you. So I know that politically we're not deeply aligned, but I do think some of those things that I just brought up in terms of how we're prioritizing individuals who get the greatest benefit, we may have some common ground. I'm wondering what, when you hear the far left, I think it's the populist wing of our party, in contrast with a populist rhetoric, I would say, on the far right, with policies that certainly do not align with that. Just give me your perceptions on this.
I mean, the observation I'd make is that I interact with a lot of business leaders when I say to them, what is going on, meaning in the Trump administration and things they're seeing, and they're horrified by it. And then they say, but the problem is that what's been offered by the other side isn't helping. It isn't working. And so that's where the fighting oligarchy or whatever just throws me off, because there's a better way here. And I think it's going to come out of the Republican Party, not the Democratic Party. I'm looking at John here.
What is the better way from your perspective?
Well, it's traditional liberalism, conservatism, and it's also liberalism in terms of classical liberalism.
Yeah.
Right.
Free markets and.
And so, do I want limited government? Yep. Do I want to unleash domestic energy production? Yes.
And I'm there with you. Yeah. Some people will say that has failed. Now, I would argue that what the Democrats absolutely have pushed, also, you look at Joe Biden's agenda, was a failure agenda as well.
And so, what specifically? Because I know we don't have time to get it. Well, maybe we'll do this another day.
But this is where it's one of those things of, I totally agree with you, but a lot of people will say,
I'm looking for the, let's say, a Senator John Curtis type, right, to be the type of person that starts to have responsible addresses to climate, responsible ways of dealing with, you know, European, you know, not stepping up to the plate in defense spending and
entitlements.
Extending the retirement age for Social Security and the like. I mean, these are things that I think are doable, and they're going to come, I think, from the right, not the left. And so I think all this rabble-rousing, this chest-beating that AOC and Bernie are doing out in, I think all it does is hurt the cause.
Yeah, I guess I'll just reiterate. The central message is that we should tax the rich appropriately to pay for critical social services that make this country stronger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I know that sounds extreme to you.
To have the kind of economic policies that lift our nation and our, you know, socioeconomically disadvantaged so that they can help take care of themselves.
You can make the argument that it's across the board.
What's across the board?
The poor don't pay taxes. The middle class is paying a much lower burden than they've ever paid in the past, you know, relatively in our modern generations.
But when
you look, you know, this gets into the dynamic, which is, okay, if we're going to have a government of this size, then you got to pay the bills. And if we don't want to pay the bills, then don't have a government this size.
Yeah. And I guess we just haven't really talked at all about national defense when we, you know, you want to jump in with entitlements. And I'll just say there are lots of ways that we could be more safe and secure in this world without the kind of military budget we have.
You too.
Well, we could wipe out the whole defense budget and still not balance our budget.
Let's go to these town halls with Congresswoman Celeste Malloy and Congressman Mike Kennedy.
Is this where I shout you down?
Oh, my goodness. You know, it was so predictable in a lot of ways. I think they handled it pretty well. But first of all, I would not have held this up on the University of Utah campus, but I think it maybe would have happened anywhere. I don't know. What are you all seeing in this? I mean, I saw pictures of people flipping the bird at our, it's not becoming of our state, but I will also say that the gerrymandering of Salt Lake City is not becoming of our state either. This is the productive middle in me that's sort of like, come on, let's not cut up our capital city. Let's let it be a community of interest for their representation. John?
Yeah, and I can't speak much to that. I don't live in Salt Lake City. Unfortunately,
It's divided into four. Am I right?
No, not the city. I think it's actually
the county.
The county
Mill
is.
Mill Creek. So just south of us.
Oh, it's, gotcha.
Yeah, the county split, but not the city.
The city is split into.
But I think you would have gotten slightly different reactions if the town hall would have been held in Provo. I think it would have been different than at University of Utah campus in Salt Lake City. But I think you still would have had a lot of these issues and people behaving boorishly, if you will, to put a nice word on it. I would say it's because we don't know how to engage politically when we disagree. I mean, right here, we can disagree. We've been practicing for a long time, but we're not calling each other names. We're not flipping the bird or anything like that. And what people don't seem to understand is, guess what? This doesn't entice people to listen to you. This causes them to say, oh, see, I was right after all.
Yeah.
What do they know?
So I just have to refresh your memory on the Jason Chaffetz town hall that did happen in Provo, where there was a similar reaction. I think this is the reaction of the moment. And do I think they handled themselves well? I guess if they stayed calm generally, but I do think that they gaslit. The questions that they responded to were not answered effectively. They did not seem to want to give a full-throated endorsement of cutting federal workers in this state. They didn't want to talk about the cuts to Medicaid that are on the table. They wanted to distract from the very real pain that Utahns are going to start feeling because of these cuts.
Well, if this is the agenda, then you need to own it.
Yeah, you better own it.
I'll predict this gets worse before it gets better. This turmoil in the districts with our congressional representatives.
Well, I think they were told not to bother holding a town hall meeting.
Yeah.
So kudos that they actually tried.
Amen. I call him Senator, but I know Mike Kennedy just a little bit. I've always thought he was really reasoned, and I like Mike Kennedy. Celeste Malloy, I think, is terrific. What I've interacted with her on.
I just have to say, or maybe add, this was announced, I think, the day before, maybe 2 days before, and there were very limited seats. This is not, and they are from two different districts, right? Go represent show up in your own districts. This, to me, is theater.
Yeah, interesting. I don't disagree in some ways, Shireen. Hey, vetoes. Governor Cox, he pulled a big veto. This is a complicated one. John, I don't know if you even want to try the 15-second explanation for it, but he vetoed the big education funding, property tax, income tax bill. I think this took a lot of political courage.
Yeah, so what the legislature wanted to do was sweep a local property tax, school levied property tax, up to the state level to send them earmarked income tax instead to try and free up some general fund money for the state to use for its budgetary needs. So they still would have funded the schools, but would have done a little shuffle with the money. Is that a quick enough description?
It is. And my understanding is we may see some more vetoes. I'm going to give Governor Cox high marks for taking this last vote, as they call a veto, very seriously. He's had over 500 bills to review, and
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
What is the deadline?
It's 20 days, so I think it's Thursday at midnight.
Okay.
That sound about right?
I was gonna say, I think it's this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll just say one thing that stood out to me in the governor's comments about this, which I will give him credit for, was the notion that he felt like Utahns value transparent government. And to have these dollars come out of their communities, go into this big pot, and then come back is confusing to people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an accurate read. Yeah. And I appreciate that he did this.
And the concern also was it was going to cause him issues potentially with financial reporting and auditing.
Yeah.
Issues.
Shireen, did you see that John's successor,
Tina Cannon.
Supported this veto.
Yes.
She's so, got some courage.
Well, my understanding is that was a review that suggested this may be unconstitutional. That was the read that I saw in the tribune.
I'm not sure the constitutionality question, but there is some concern when it comes to audit standards and accounting principles.
John, we got a new poll. Noble Predictive Insights did a poll for Count My Vote, basically showing that Utahns really support the multiple pathways to the ballot.
So what are they again?
Signatures convention, and the caucus convention.
Caucus convention and signatures.
And signatures, right.
Uh-huh. And the more the caucus convention folks ostracize the rank and file voters in the state, the more that you get support for two paths.
So less than 1 in 8 Utahns want delegates at party conventions to have the sole power to nominate primary election candidates. Shireen, I'm watching this unfold, and we've got two Republican parties in this state right now.
That's right.
One that's led
maybe more
by our legislature and the governor, and another that's led by Phil Lyman.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'll just say, I want to remind people, especially with the Republicans, in part because there are more of you, right? These convention meetings can sometimes take, 16 hours, mm-hmm. right?
On a Saturday.
On a
Usually
Saturday.
It's always sunny, beautiful springtime.
When we think about the preference poll.
April, we ended at midnight only because our lease was till midnight and we ran out of time.
Right. So the preference poll, which was to indicate your preference for the presidential nominee this last cycle, that was a bit of a mismanaged disaster. So when people have the kind of time to...
I thought it was a good idea that wasn't well executed.
Sure. But people didn't have time to deal with these things. And I think your average Republican voter is kind of tired of the mess, which is why the two paths make sense to me.
Yeah. Hey, just a couple more minutes left in the program. John, you have some memories with Mia Love.
Yeah, I can remember campaigning with her early on. I saw her as a passionate trailblazer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, glass ceilings, you know, first Black female Republican to get elected to Congress. I always found her to be a very passionate person. Had an amazing husband. I ran into Jason many times, not just on the campaign trail, but around at different political events. And so my heart goes out to her family, her husband, and her kids.
Yeah. Shireen, we've already talked about it, but I wanted to get John to say that. What do you read into this in the end that she wrote such a stateswomanly commentary about the future of our country and what she wants to see?
Yeah, I do think it was a beautiful piece and really such a testament to character. It's hard for me to have this moment happen, of course, extending deepest condolences to her family, but not acknowledge kind of the broader backdrop of what's happening to cancer research in this community.
Mm-hmm.
$50 million is what I last heard has been cut from the Huntsman Cancer Research Institute. People's lives are being extended by interventions around brain cancer, pancreatic cancer. This administration's cutting that. Her life was cut too short, and I fear that more people will suffer this pain.
You could say some of the same commentary about the treatment of immigrants.
You bet.
She's a Haitian immigrant. Her parents were. and whatnot.
And she regularly shared that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And demonstrated the American dream.
So how do we get it? We got about 45 seconds left or whatever in the program. What do we do next, you two? We got, you know, bad things happening on Signal. We got economy that's on recession watch. We've got town halls that people are yelling and screaming. Let's each of us just give our best advice for what next.
So I'm going to continue to believe in the power of organizing your own community. Start on your own block. Talk to your neighbors. I'm out collecting signatures for the referendum. I think that a lot of people are engaged when they find the opportunity to get connected, whether that's through service, through political action, or just knowing neighbor to neighbor what their neighbors need.
John, we'll give you the last word. We got 15 seconds.
I was going to say, reach out and find somebody you disagree with and look for opportunities to learn from them.
That's great.
From anybody.
I will echo my two colleagues here. I'm Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gourbani and John Dougal. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.